brought to you by Burr and Foreman, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's time for Results Matter Radio, where we bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be. Now, here are your hosts, Elizabeth Gordon and Lee Cantor.
Matter Radio. It's Tuesday, August 28th, 2012, and I've got a terrific show with a packed studio for you here. We are talking to Atlanta Corporate In-House Council winners and finalists. With me today in the studio is Dorian Denberg, who is the past president of the National Association of Women Lawyers. It's 111th president, magical number there, founded in 1899 to advance women in the legal profession. Dorian, welcome.
Thank you. We're glad
to have you here. Also, we have Kali Wilson Beha, who is with Delta Airlines, general attorney and in-house counsel, and a winner of the Rising Star Award. Kali, welcome.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Glad to be here.
And Eric Wilson's with us as well. Eric is with H.J. Russell and the winner of the Outstanding General Counsel Solo, and also representing the Association of Corporate Counsel, Georgia Board. Eric, welcome.
Thank you. That's Eric Hilton.
Eric Hilton.
Thank you.
Got my name.
Thank you for that correction.
We're not together.
And of course, we've got Ashby Kent here as well, joining us again on the show. Ashby is a commercial litigator with Burr & Foreman. Ashby, welcome back.
Thank you, Elizabeth, and thanks to our panel today.
Absolutely. This is going to be a great conversation. Dorian, let's start with you. Tell us a bit about what AT&T's Legal Department Diversity Committee is doing, and especially as it relates to diversity.
AT&T Legal Department started its diversity committee about 4 years ago, and since that time, we've doubled in size. We've got a really active committee nationally. We support all the national bar associations and diversity organizations, both financially in terms of sponsorship, but also in terms of involvement, and I'm an example as past president of NAHL. We have a summer intern program where we've got about 12 minority and women interns across the country. We have begun diversity awards for small, medium, and large firms, and we give awards at our annual legal department meeting every year. We have, as many corporations do, we track our spending in terms of women and minorities by staffing attorneys, paralegals, both with majority-owned firms, and we also are looking at our spend with minority-owned firms, particularly firms, for instance, that would be members of NAM with National Association of Minority and Women-Owned Law Firms. We have begun scholarship for bar prep courses. We have a great mentoring program for street law, which many are familiar with. It's with high school students, but also we're mentoring pre-law students. And those are some of the things that we're doing, but it's a really engaged a group.
Absolutely. Sounds like diversity is core to the strategy of the company in many different ways.
It is. It is. And we see that actually in the legal department. While we haven't hired a lot of attorneys, as most people haven't over the last couple of years, when we see our new attorneys being introduced, you can see the diversity in the hiring. And that's also emblematic of AT&T as a corporation. Itself. In 2011, 34% of our new hires were women, 47% were people of color, and at AT&T, 31% of our managers are people of color, whereas the national average is 22%.
So you're above the national
Absolutely.
Average.
Absolutely, and it's a core value of our chairman.
Absolutely, a leader and clearly a diversity champion,
yes,
we see.
You.
Now, a lot of companies are making significant efforts and focus on diversity and inclusion within corporate America. How are companies seeing these efforts pay off, and how are you seeing it pay off at AT&T?
Well, I mean, I think that we are seeing, for instance, and I'm sure that this is true with Kali at Delta as an example, our managers are evaluated on on diversity initiatives and hiring. So, for instance, with the legal officers, they are evaluated in terms of spend, in terms of the firms, for instance, that I was talking about. But I think that there are intentional efforts at this point in terms of tracking opportunities and trying to manage careers for individuals in-house and, frankly, in law firms. I mean, we see that tremendously across the board, that diverse and inclusion efforts in corporations are driving the work of law firms in terms of the retention and the hiring, the retention, the promotion, and the work that is being spent in terms of nurturing young lawyers and women and people of color in the higher echelons as they are moving in toward partnership tracks. Because one of the things that we see, and this is from my work with NAHL that we see, is there is a tremendous drop-off as people enter the legal profession, and then the higher you go in your career, particularly in law firms, the numbers drop off significantly. But back to your question about in-house, I think that there are a lot of opportunities for women and attorneys of color in-house that are not as available, if you will, in the large law firm environment. We see a lot of people wanting to come in-house, feeling that they have more control over their careers, which is positive for everybody.
Sure. Well, let's talk about NAHL a bit. I'm curious, Kali, you're also involved in NAHL. What's been your experience with the organization? And Dorian, tell us a little bit more about your role there.
Sure. Well, I think I came to NAHL probably because of my friendship with Dorian, if I recall correctly. It may have also been because my former law firm was involved with NAHL as well. But they have tremendous programming, and I'll highlight just a few of my favorites, and then I'll note my personal experience and how I think it was so beneficial to be involved in NAHL. One of my favorites is a night of giving where a law firm in a city, because NAHL is national and they really do host things all over the country, so they'll have a night of giving at a law firm and it's a reception. It's a great opportunity to network with other lawyers, other like-minded individuals who are committed to diversity in law firms and in-house environments, but also for a cause. So you're usually bringing something or making a donation to a local charity in that city. So it's also an opportunity to both bring people together, but also harness that group to better our community, because I think that's also part of what our obligation is as lawyers and as people who are part of a larger community. So that's a great opportunity. The other thing is they have tremendous national events, including their annual luncheon, which is probably my favorite. It's at the Waldorf, so maybe that's enough said right there.
Gotta be
but
good.
It's right. So it's at the Waldorf in New York. So you eat well, and it's a beautiful scene, and it's just such an energizing event because there are so many folks, not just women, but men as well, who are supporters of diversity and inclusion, and the speakers that they bring in, I mean, including the National Board, which is always just an impressive group of women, but also the speakers. I think this year was Leslie Turner, who is now the general counsel at Hershey. And so you get to hear from people who have walked the walk, and those folks are often honored by NAHL as well. And then my last sort of thing, because I could go on and on about NAHL, is just, and I've been to their CLEs, and they have monthly or periodic phone calls, webinars that talk about topics ranging from, you know, women sort of in the corner office and how to really make the most of your careers to balancing your career with the rest of your life. But the other thing is just there's a real personal gift in Nahl, and that is the friendships that you develop, the relationships. There are business relationships. When I was in a law firm, I developed relationships that resulted in business opportunities and real meaningful connections. But more than that, I developed personal friendships that are, I mean, I'd say one of my closest friends is a Nahl past president.
Nice. So it's business relationships as well as personal, and that's very important. Now, Eric, let's bring you into the conversation here. Eric Hilton, tell us a little bit more about what you do at H.J. Russell, what a typical day is like, and how you work with the company.
Yes, I'm my title is Senior Vice President and General Counsel, and we are a construction, real estate, and property management company. I am the sole lawyer in the organization. My day is as different as the days. I may be reviewing a construction contract, I may be before the EEOC handling an EEOC charge, reviewing a development agreement, giving general counseling throughout the organization. So it's every day is different. I make good use of outside counsel, who I have very good relationships with. And just taking a step back on diversity, I just want to make a point on diversity. Diversity makes good business sense. Because, you know, we're the oldest minority construction company in the country. Minority lawyers do seek us out to do work for us. But we also, for the law firms that we do hire, we make sure that they are as diverse as we are in the communities that we serve. So diversity really makes good business sense. I just want to echo that. Just having that diverse perspective from your legal counsel makes all the difference in the world as far as your results.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, and diversity is a very broad term. So we can talk about, you know, male, female, and race. There's also generational diversity. I'm sure that in all of your organizations, you've all encountered all of these forms of diversity and have some thoughts about the value that they provide to the business.
Sure. I can speak just a little on generational diversity. We're in a workplace now that has really three generations that are in the workplace. You have your baby boomers are still there. Those are folks who were born from anywhere from 1940 in the 50s. Generation X, which I'm a part of, your Generation Y, and your millennials aren't there yet. But each generation kind of brings their own characteristics to the workplace. And just being able to understand the differences, being able to understand what motivates the younger generation is important because there are differences. I mean, you may be have a title, but the younger generation, the Generation Yers, may not necessarily respect you just for your title. They want to see results. They work differently. They may work on their BlackBerry, by email, by text, which the older generation just doesn't do that. So the last point I'll make on it is, the law is a apprenticeship profession. And I tell younger lawyers this all the time. You need to be an apprentice. So if you're working with a lawyer who's from Generation Y or a baby boomer or even a traditionalist, an older lawyer, then you need to understand the way they work and work the way that they work because it's an apprenticeship profession.
Great point. Absolutely. Khalid, describe your role at Delta and tell us what a typical day is like for you.
Sure. Well, I'm a general attorney at Delta, and we have a law department of about 34, 35 lawyers and divided among a variety of areas. But my area is litigation and regulatory work, and my responsibilities really are handling pretty much any kind of litigation other than employment or litigation that's insured. The insured litigation would be, for example, if you're on board and, heaven forbid, a bag fall out of the overhead compartment onto your head, that would not be my case. but what would be my case is, for example, if you had a big complaint about your SkyMiles account and you brought a class action around it, that would probably be my case. Patent infringement lawsuits, I handle quite a lot of those right now. I have ERISA litigation, which is basically employee benefits litigation. And then I have really, small litigation that is a small vendor who's upset over a $30,000 a year contract. And then I have cases that truly impact our company's financial statements. So it's a wide range of litigation. And then in terms of regulatory work, we are, as an airline, regulated by the Department of Transportation, and there are a variety of evolving and pretty aggressive, I'd say, regulations out there by the Department of Transportation. And so I counsel our clients internally about what those regulations require. And whenever new technologies or processes are being brought out, I or folks in my team, we work with our business people to evaluate any compliance obligations that relate to those new products or processes or offerings. So it's an exciting thing. And much like what Eric said, there is no typical day. I mean, it ranges from a day that is a deposition and I'm in it and handling it, because I also defend depositions when, for example, our company gets subpoenaed, to working with outside counsel, which we use heavily. But we use in a very, we're very hands-on with our outside counsel. So sometimes it means I am on Westlaw, researching case law, finding hearing transcript sites for briefings. And then some days I am sitting in a meeting about how some reports we're going to send to our corporate customers and whether there are privacy implications that we should consider in doing that. So it's a wide range of things. It's never dull. I think that's what I love about it. You get to be a generalist and your skills, you're hands-on enough, I think, at Delta. And it's, and I know for a fact that at Russell and at AT&T, the way we all handle our cases are, is that we're so hands-on that you get to keep your skills really sharp too. So it's a great balance of being a generalist, but also, I mean, if I had to go in and try a case tomorrow, I still could.
Nice. Well, let's talk about the value of having in-house legal counsel. Why is it important for an organization to have in-house counsel versus relying solely on outside counsel?
Well, haven't you talked? Aren't we awesome?
Hello? Well, I mean, the proof is right here in the room. Don't get me wrong.
The value of in-house counsel is knowing the business. And in-house counsel, I mean, the value of outside counsel to in-house counsel is not just somebody who brings their legal know-how to the table, but also understands your business, the your goals, your initiatives, and really is a business partner with you. That is some of the value add. But I mean, a good outside counsel is a counselor, not just a lawyer. But in-house counsel, it's the same thing. You're shoulder to shoulder with your clients. And the beauty, I think, is, and one of the things I love about being in-house, is the ability to be proactive, to see a problem as it's developing and then develop solutions. I do a lot of counseling separate and apart from litigation support, but therefore you can see a problem. Perhaps you can help with a legislative solution, first there's a litigation solution. You can have a legislative solution. As Khalees says, you know, you're sitting in meetings and you are counseling the clients, and there's no substitute for it being your bottom line. And at least in a public corporation like AT&T, it's our dollars, it's our shareholder value, and it's a very different world for an outside counsel to be hired. You're shaking your head, right?
Yeah, I mean, at times I think business professionals don't always see the value of in-house lawyers, particularly in smaller organizations. They sometimes see lawyers as deal killers, and we're a good in-house lawyer is a problem solver. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's so important to realize that a good in-house lawyer will save the company exponentially as far as legal spend in dollars. Just from a very basic level, lawyers can talk to lawyers. So if I'm hiring an outside attorney to perform work for the company, I know how to properly manage that and get the best bang for the buck. And then I'll echo the point of being a good business partner. It's so important to understand the business. And when you're dealing with a lot of outside lawyers without an in-house lawyer, I've seen instances where outside counsel can take advantage. So having a lawyer, and that's not anything negative, it's just everyone has their own clients, and you have business professionals who don't know how to properly articulate what they need to the outside lawyer, which results in higher legal spend. So being that business partner in the organization as the in-house lawyer is paramount. It's a great thing. So,
Ashby, what are your thoughts about in-house counsel and outside counsel working effectively together?
Well, what I think is so interesting, and I think people outside the legal community think it's very strange when people ask me, well, who are a majority of your clients? And I say, well, they're actually other lawyers. And nobody really understands that. But in-house counsel really get that, because when I am retained by a company, my direct contact with that company is the in-house counsel. And to echo Eric's point, It is so much more efficient and effective, I find, when I can communicate with an in-house counsel, because they understand not only the business aspects and the business risks of what our goals are, but they understand the legal ins and outs. And sometimes when you have a client that is not a non-lawyer, they might not understand what it is that you're trying to do, or they might not really understand the legal ins and outs, which, as Eric has pointed out, can increase the legal spend, as we call it. Whereas when you're dealing with an in-house counsel, it's so much more efficient and effective in solving those problems, and in also getting the perspective of that in-house lawyer about the specific business risk or the specific business objective that you're trying to solve. So I love it when I'm getting to work with an in-house lawyer as my client. It's something that the non-lawyers might think is strange, that a lawyer would have a lawyer as a client. But I think the lawyers are the best clients most of the time.
I mean, I think it's awkward when you have a lawyer, an outside lawyer, who's explaining a legal bill to a business professional and trying to explain why you spent X number of dollars on discovery or a 30B6 deposition. It's kind of like talking to a plumber for them.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
It can create distrust without that person inside the organization who can really help explain, help make it a better relationship, and help you better serve the company.
Absolutely.
But I will tell you something. One of the things that I love about being in-house counsel, and I was outside counsel for AT&T's predecessor, is, and I'm sure that you find this as well, is the huge array of clients that I get to deal with. So I'll have the guy in the field who's standing outside a pole who's got a problem, and I'm dealing all the way up to, you know, the officer, because my clients are the folks who give you voice, video, and data. So I counsel the network clients on both the wireless and the wireline side, who put facilities in the ground, on poles, in the air, who are moving facilities, who are taking care of our folks, and a shout out today and the thoughts for those who are going to be dealing with Hurricane Isaac. So I love that, in addition to dealing with lawyers as colleagues and outside counsel, that I get to work with this huge array of backgrounds and also geographically, because I've dealt with folks all over the country.
And I think the point you make about the diversity of clients you have also relates to why it's so important to have strong in-house counsel that partners with outside counsel, because your business, however diverse it is still a continuum. So what I'm doing in a litigation matter is not in a vacuum.
Right.
But when you're on the outside, I think we've all been on the outside at some point in our careers. When you're on the outside, you're really dealing with the litigation or whatever matter it is, the transaction, in a vacuum. And so you have no idea the impact of, you know, some identifying a process failure, and whether it impacts other aspects of the organization. Or you have no sense of the fact that if you advise me to do X and Y, it really puts me in a conflict in another set of circumstances where doing X and Y is really either cost prohibitive or requires manpower or requires regulatory approval or woman power, all of those things that you don't really have any visibility to when you're on the outside. And I think that's both the excitement and the challenge of being on the inside, is you see the problem, as Dorian described it, coming down the pike. And part of how you can see it is because you know the landscape, or you have an opportunity to get to know the landscape. So you know this is not in a vacuum. This is, okay, I solve it over here, and that means that we have to be proactive on this other end, and we have to do Y in this situation, and we have to change the process so this doesn't happen again. So that really makes for both an interesting and pretty significant role for in-house counsel.
One of the other things that I was just going to say that you made me think about, Khalid, is a best practice. And so that when you have a national corporation like we do, you can see a best practice in one location and then import or adopt that, you know, and take the steps so that you've got best practices across the department.
Right. Yeah, I'll just echo that. Counseling and working with the internal client, for me, is very personally fulfilling. My clients, I have some distinct clients. I have owners of the company. I have our board of directors. I have officers, and I have department heads. So all of those folks collectively, and I have employees, so all of those folks collectively may have different interests, and often we have to balance the interests of those diverse groups. So that is a challenge, but there's nothing more fulfilling than working on a matter internally and seeing it from start to finish, even with the help of outside counsel. We're all a team. That's how I view it. And just seeing the issue from start to finish and getting it resolved or getting a business deal done. And you really have a different perspective being the in-house lawyer.
Right. What advice would you give to new or younger lawyers? You've all had a lot of experience in a lot of different areas at this point in your career. What advice would you give to young folks just starting in the legal profession?
Are you speaking of somebody who's new to in-house or just starting out in the legal profession generally?
In terms of the perspective of both sides.
Okay. One thing I think very, very important is out of the gate, you need to think about long-term. What I mean by that is, and I think Eric made a great point in terms earlier of generational diversity, networking. People are told network, network, network. They don't know what it means. So understanding that you can network in the world around you, that everybody you know is a contact, everybody you know is potentially a business referral or potentially a job source. So thinking about your world in terms of networking, understanding economics. Today, the choices for young lawyers are so different than they were 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. So if you're coming into a large firm, the bottom line is being a good lawyer today is absolutely simply not enough. All of us around this table know great lawyers who are out of jobs or looking to make moves. If you want to be successful in a large firm, you need to know how to bring in business. Understanding how to make rain is critical to the success, but you've also got to be a good lawyer. You've also got to understand relationships in the firm. If you are going to be in-house, you need to understand business. So one of the things I would suggest, I mean, Eric, as the legal department for Russell, obviously has got to understand business. If you're in a public corporation, you've got to understand business. If you want to succeed in-house, you need to be able to understand and speak business as well as law. Anybody who just understands law and doesn't understand, you know, the ins and outs of economics is not going to succeed. You need to understand both the economics of a practice. A lot of folks we see today are starting their own firms, and therefore you need to be able to understand admin as an example. You don't just have the luxury of practicing law. I think that you need to understand, again, in terms of networking, it's all about relationships. You need to be thinking, if you're going to go in-house, to not just have relationships in the legal department, but to have relationships with your clients. And to Eric's point, being able to be a yay-sayer, not a nay-sayer, figuring out strategies of how you can get things done and enabling your clients. And that would be the same thing in terms of a law firm lawyer. Nobody wants to hear no, whether you're a child or a client, you know, legal or non-legal. Nobody wants to hear no. You want to see how you can get it done, how to see around corners.
Right.
So those are some of the suggestions I would have.
Those are great. We're actually about running out of time. This has been such a great conversation, but I am going to do our Results Matter segment now. So we have a special tradition on this show where we always sum it up by talking about the results that matter to each of our wonderful guests. So it's been great having all of you on the show with us today. Khalil, let's start with you and talk about what are the results that matter to you?
The results that matter. Do you mean in terms of the results that matter in my career?
Well, the results that matter to you as far as being a champion of in-house counsel at Delta.
Sure. Gosh, there's so many results that matter. I mean, there are results that matter from a personal standpoint in terms of when you're a litigator, the results that matter include winning and getting your client to the yes, like Dorian described. So one of them is just the general are keeping my clients happy, being responsive, helping them get things to market, and then working with outside counsel who help me do that, who counsel me, not just feed me sort of, I don't need just conduits, but truly good, meaningful counseling. So that's one piece of the results that matter, and that's just the tangible, you know, in the office results that matter. The other results that matter are basic, just knowing I'm getting good training and giving good training to the people that work with me and for me. And then the last result I'd say that matters is just treating people well, including, you know, being a part of this community, having an impact, helping others, and being good to my family and loved ones.
Awesome. You're doing a great job with all of that. And if people want to find out more about Delta, they can go to
www.delta.com.
Make sure we get that in there. Kali, Dorian, you're up next here with our Results Matter segment.
I really think it's difficult to add much to what Kali said. I think I would say two things, though, in addition to that. I really enjoy seeing the success of people that I mentor. And I have been able to see people get business. People take on leadership roles in organizations, which have then enabled them internally to become leaders, as an example, whether it's a managing partner of their firm or because of the business that they have generated, become in the leadership of their firm, as an example, or in their department. And the other thing I think I would have to say is seeing my kids, who I am really proud of, who are terrific people and who have gotten involved in their communities in college, so that matters to me too. But I thought Kali's response really summed it all up.
That's fantastic. And AT&T website, and as also the National Association of Women Lawyers, if people want to
thanks. Well, of course, www.att.com, and then NAWL, which rhymes with y'all, is www.nawl.org.
Fantastic. Eric, let's move over to you.
Well, results matter. I don't give too many points for effort. I'm just going to be real. So, in our profession, professionally for the lawyers that we hire, results matter. So you have to get our results. Personally, as far as the legal profession, for me, leaving a profession that's more diverse, that has increased opportunities for women attorneys of color, is personally important. So those are some of the things that are very important to me personally as far as results.
Great. And H.J. Russell & Company website?
www.hjrussell.com.
Excellent. Ashby, bring it on home for us.
Okay. Well, just very briefly, we actually just had our first annual women's retreat at my firm this past weekend for our women's initiative. We've had a diversity initiative for several years, but we've just started this year a real focus on women in our firm and how we can help our female attorneys grow personally and professionally. And from a results standpoint, kind of to echo several topics that we've touched on, is defining success in a way that's meaningful to you as an individual. And that doesn't always mean being the highest paid partner in the firm. That might mean successfully balancing a legal career with being a mom to four children that are under the age of 10. And so one of the things that I think is important for all lawyers, and especially female lawyers, is to really take a look inside and be honest with yourself about who you are as an individual and what success means to you. And I think that's the way you find what results will matter to you as an individual, and that's the way you grow as a person and a professional.
Excellent. It's been wonderful to hear about all the passion that you all have for what you're doing and to get to know you. Thank you for being guests on the Results Matter show today.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
This is Elizabeth Gordon signing off. We will talk to you next week.
This has been a joint production of Burr and Foreman and Business Radio X. Burr and Foreman is a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast. If results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give Burr and Foreman a call at 404-685-4337. For more information and to find the right attorney for you, visit burr.com. That's B-U-R-R.com.